Senator Hart, we hear a great deal of reporting from the site of the Three Mile Island nuclear event. Some of it seems contradictory. Some of it is hard to understand. You're the chairman of the nuclear subcommittee. Can you tell us, do you believe that there is still a risk that before this is all over, before the entire incident is finished, there is a risk of a catastrophic accident?
Yes, Mr. Herman, I do believe that risk exists. It's very difficult to quantify because this is a unique occurrence. There are teams of experts, as you know, on the scene, both private and public officials. They are trying to determine the best course of dealing with this unique situation. But until this situation is dealt with, until the reactor is in what is called a cold shutdown situation, the risk that you've described does exist.
From CBS News, Washington, Face the Nation on the CBS Radio Network. A spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with Senator Gary Hart, Democrat of Colorado, and chairman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Subcommittee on Nuclear Regulation. Senator Hart will be questioned by CBS News correspondent Robert Shackney, by David Burnham, reporter for the New York Times, and by CBS News correspondent George Herman.
Senator Hart, you say there is a risk of a catastrophic accident at the nuclear plant, and you say it is difficult to quantify it. I'll respect that difficulty, but let me ask you this. Do you think that the risk is sufficient so that Pennsylvania should now be considering immediate or phased future evacuation of part of the area?
Yes, I do, and I think that planning should go forward fairly intensively until this issue, this critical issue that involves the internal condition of the reactor is resolved. Now, that may be a day, it may be a week, but I think that planning ought to be right on the front burner and ready to implement at any time.
Senator, it's our understanding that you just were briefed by the NRC. Did you get any indication when the bubble that they're so worried that it might cause an explosion, not a nuclear explosion, but an explosion. Did you get any indication when they think this system, this problem has to be resolved? Is it something that has to be done today, tomorrow, the next day? Should we begin evacuation right now?
It's my understanding that's a function of the pressures and temperatures inside the reactor and the containment. Those have stabilized. When the officials are talking about a stable condition, what they mean is that the pressures and temperatures have stabilized and are relatively under control, and no uncontrolled burning is going on inside. But the bubble issue, the most critical issue now, must be resolved sometime. They are making efforts now and taking steps involving moving some special equipment in. Recombiners, they are called, and some other equipment, lead shields. Once those are in place, then a decision will be made to try to relieve some of the pressure from that bubble and vent some of that hydrogen into the containment. And that could be in the next 24 hours or 48 or 72. But I'm sure there'll be plenty of public announcements about that.
Is there any doubt in your mind before this is over, because of the risks involved, that there will have to be an evacuation?
Well, that is a decision the governor of Pennsylvania will ultimately have to make based on information provided him by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission officials, federal government officials, advice and other recommendations by private individuals. I wouldn't want to, nor do I think it would be fair to substitute my judgment for his. My own feeling, however, were I in his shoes, and those are not going to be comfortable shoes in the next few days, is that that he should err on the side of caution, and I'm sure based on what has gone on so far, he will. And that is to say, when this critical operation begins, whichever of several courses it may take, that the better part of prudence will be to move people out.
Are you saying, in effect, that the risks right now are those of some kind of serious accident at some point in the future, sufficient so the people will have to be moved out?
Well, I think that really goes back to Mr. Herman's first question, and the answer is yes. But because we're in a unique area, we're in a situation no one has dealt with before. And I think all the officials at all levels want to do everything within an abundance of caution, that without trying to panic people, you still at the same time have to look after the welfare of the people in the immediate area. I think the answer really goes to how close you are to that reactor and how much evacuation preparation there should be as you move out.
Can you discuss that?
Well, certainly. And again, I would only put it in personal terms because I think that's the best way for people to understand. If I or my family lived within 5 miles of that reactor and this operation began, I would want my family out of there. If I were living within between 5 and 10 miles, I would make plans to leave. That is to say, have everything at the ready. And if I were outside that 10-mile area, I might ask Aunt Tilly in Reading to prepare the guest room.
Senator, the official government study on this subject says that the worst possible accident, which we say is now a possibility, could result in the death of immediate death of 3,300 people and the immediate injuries of 45,000, latent cancers in 45,000, and hundreds of thousands of other injuries. Given the size of that potential, why doesn't the federal government right now order an evacuation? What are the arguments against that?
Federal government, first of all, has no legal authority to order an evacuation. The governor has that authority under all the laws that I'm aware of. And that's the way the emergency planning is done on a state-by-state basis, because different states have different procedures. What the federal government can and should do, I think, is keep the governor and the other state officials apprised of the situation as best they know it. I think the federal government can take some other actions, however, that would be extremely helpful in this situation.
Well, I think you better specify.
Well, I'm concerned, frankly, about what we could call the crisis management problem here. There is a real doubt as to who's in charge. Up to now, the operator utility has been making all the decisions, increasingly with the advice of federal officials from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and other experts that have been brought in. But I think one of the lessons, one of the many lessons I hope we've learned out of this, is we have to improve that crisis management situation. I've already recommended for my own part that I intend to put legislation in as quickly as possible to drastically increase the federal government's monitoring capabilities of these plants nationwide and drastically increase the federal government's ability to move in and, in effect, take over all the operational decisions of a reactor that is in a critical situation. Further, I would recommend to the NRC, and have already discussed with some of the commissioners, the possibility of asking that all the other reactors, which have been similarly designed, the so-called Babcock and Wilcox reactors, of which there are probably 10, that power in those reactors be reduced forthwith, that is to say, immediately, to perhaps 50% of capacity.
May I just interject at that point to ask you a question, because that seems to me to imply that you think there is something wrong, that this was not just a concatenation of coincidences, but that there is something wrong with the Babcock and Wilcox design.
Well, I think it's been fairly well documented already, preliminarily, that there are anywhere from 3 to 6 or 8 malfunctions of one kind or another that were technological. The other plants, similarly designed, obviously have that same equipment and are subject to that same kind of failure. Some of the problems were compounded, of course, by human decisions.
Senator, that raises the question, the government's supposed to check the design, check the construction to make sure that these are safe. Is the evidence before us in this case and the other Babcock and Wilcox plants, is the evidence before us suggest that the federal regulation has been lax or incompetent?
I think it's much too early to say. My own preliminary judgment is no. But of course, safety is not an absolute. It's a relative term. And once we, in effect, bought the nuclear option 20 or 25 years ago, and billions of dollars, including $4 or $5 billion of taxpayers' money, was invested in this industry, I think everyone all along accepted certain risks. Now, this is unique. I quarrel with those who indicate that this is just another ordinary source of energy. The risks are the same as a coal mine disaster or the flaring or burning of an oil well. From all we know and the statistics you've indicated about the dimensions of a catastrophe where nuclear power are concerned, it isn't the same, and it shouldn't be treated the same. So higher safety standards should be enforced. They are, in effect, in the law and regulations of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. But I just want to point out, it was only 2 weeks ago when the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was being severely criticized by people in the public sector, cabinet-level officers and others, and many in the private sector for potentially increasing consumer rates by closing down 5 plants on the East Coast because of weaknesses in those systems.
Senator, you said we need better crisis management. Are you saying that, and someone else might have to take over besides the utility, are you saying that there's something inadequate, that Metropolitan Edison Company did something wrong?
Well, again, I think final judgments are premature. All I'm saying is that we're talking about responsibilities here. The responsibilities of the officers of that utility are primarily to their stockholders. and to their investors. The public officials have sworn an oath to protect and defend the public health and safety of the people of this country. Now, that's a divergence of responsibilities. And if you've got a crisis situation with a nuclear reactor, I think those public officials should be making the decisions.
But are the private officials, the Metropolitan Edison officials, have they made any decisions that you know of against the public health and safety? Specifically, there was apparently an operator error. Was that because of any irresponsibility on the part of Metropolitan Edison?
Again, we won't know till we hold our hearings, and those will be forthcoming as quickly as the dust settles here. But the Nuclear Regulatory Commission officials, who are much more technical experts than I, have already indicated for their part that there was, in fact, operator error. As recently as, I think, the last 12 or 24 hours, there was some venting of the hydrogen bubble still inside the containment, but outside the reactor. Now, whether that was purposeful or accidental, we don't know yet, but it was a decision taken by the operator utility, and the NRC was not informed. And that's been a course of conduct here that's of great concern to me.
Can I clear up what seems to me a couple of loose ends that I've accidentally left here? I asked you originally about the likelihood or the risk of a catastrophic accident. I think perhaps we ought to specify there are various ways it could go. We David talked about a gas explosion. That's one. Is there still any risk of what is usually loosely called a meltdown, a melting of the fuel to where some of the radioactive, highly radioactive fuel could enter, say, the groundwaters of the Chesapeake Bay?
Yes, there is. It is now secondary in importance to the disposition of the so-called bubble, the trapped gases in the reactor itself.
Secondary, but in the sense that it's less likely?
I think that's true, but it's interrelated. The problem is how to dispose of the trapped gases in the bubble without further exposing the core and increasing the heat inside the core or inside the reactor itself. And those problems are directly interrelated and can't be separated. But the primary problem is to reduce the risk represented by those trapped gases, primarily hydrogen and now some increasing oxygen levels, without an explosion, without a spark, and without causing the kind of rupture of the containment that would represent. But that must be done in a way that doesn't increase the pressure and heat in the reactor itself and therefore lead to the kind of situation you're talking
about. What kind of dangers are posed in that area? An explosion, a non-nuclear explosion through the walls that would just throw radioactive material on people, radioactive material getting into the Susquehanna River and possibly going down to Chesapeake Bay. What are the serious concerns you have?
Well, again, I want to qualify this and every other answer by saying I am not a nuclear expert and do not hold myself out to be. I am basing my opinions here on information I received from the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as of about an hour ago and other experts as of about a half an hour ago and other reports. The two principal concerns in response to your question are, one, an explosion, a non-nuclear explosion that would rupture not only the reactor but the containment and vent or release large amounts of highly radioactive gases and other debris. The second is an accidental venting that didn't involve an explosion but did involve the accidental release in this delicate technical process of some of those highly radioactive gases, but was non-explosive. And then the third, I think back to Mr. Herman, is the issue of the core meltdown in part or in whole.
One other loose end before we go in other directions. You talked about the need for Pennsylvania to go forward with planning for evacuation. I note that in one of your releases shortly after the accident began, you said it is unconscionable that only 10 states have been found by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to have all the essential elements of peacetime nuclear emergency plans in place. Pennsylvania is not one of those states. Now, are they getting that kind of planning assistance for emergency from the federal government, or are they, how can it go forward? How is it going forward?
Well, to complete an answer earlier to Mr. Burnham, the third recommendation I would make is that every state which has a nuclear reactor in its borders be required one way or the other to have an emergency evacuation plan in place and rehearsed within the next 30 days. Now, I think that's a precautionary measure also and should be taken. Once again, the law here is unclear because it's not clear what the federal government can do to force a state to do this. I would think any governor with a nuclear reactor in his borders or his or her borders would want to take that step fairly quickly. But But the state of Pennsylvania, I think, has responded extremely well. The governor is on the scene and looking at this, obviously, very carefully, and I think that planning is going forward. There is a serious question. If there is the explosion of the type that I was discussing with Mr. Shackney, and it happened without warning, there are going to have to be about 750,000 people moved in the downwind sector from that plant.
How far downwind are you talking about?
Well, the figure that's being used is 20 miles, but again, that has a lot to do with the amount and level of radioactivity released.
The speed of the wind.
And the direction and speed of the wind.
Broadening the question a little bit, what does this accident now mean to the future of nuclear energy, and if it gets worse, what does it mean? Does it mean that we're going to close down the 70 nuclear power plants that we have in the United States now?
I don't think so, and again, that's a medium to long-range judgment that the Congress will want to participate in after hearings are held, the President will have some views on, and of course it catches us at a very bad time in this country. We're having troubles politically in the Middle East, our supplies of imported oil are decreasing, we haven't gone to coal as fast as we should have, we haven't gone to alternative energy supplies such as solar as fast as we should have, and we've got some real energy supply problems.
Given the whole situation that it's time for Mr. Schlesinger to go and another man to be brought in?
No. No one person is responsible for energy policy in this country, and I'm not one of Mr. Schlesinger's critics. I disagree with him on the future of nuclear power, and I did before this incident. And I'm also concerned about some casual assumptions that the consumers are going to have to pay the very sizable bill this problem represents, even if it's resolved satisfactorily.
This is a CBS News special report on President Carter's visit to the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant. I'm Mitchell Krause reporting on the CBS radio network. The president, who's just visited the crippled plant, is now at the Middletown, Pennsylvania Borough Hall, where he is about to make a statement. My colleague Richard Roth is there. Dick, what's going on?
The president has just entered the Middletown Borough Hall building. He had just moments ago stepped from his car, which pulled up in front of the town hall building here in Middletown, Pennsylvania, a city with a population of 12,000. We're just about 4 miles northeast of the nuclear facility. We can't see who is with the president. We were told earlier that his wife, Rosalind, had come with him, and also that his science advisor, Dr. Frank Press, was also there. The president had just completed a tour of the reactor facility on Three Mile Island. He had, prior to that tour, he had been briefed by Dr. Harold Denton, who is chief of power plant regulation for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Dr. Denton arrived here in Middletown on Friday at the president's direction. He is the president's technical advisor on site.
Dick, also
scheduled to be with the president are Governor of Pennsylvania, Dick Thornburgh. And incidentally, since we are within the 4 mile radius of the nuclear facility, Governor Thornburgh's wife, we're told, is not here. She is pregnant with their first child. And the governor had suggested on Friday that pregnant women and preschool age children remove themselves. It was a suggestion that they evacuate this area within 4 miles of the nuclear facility. The president, we're also told, wore a radiation badge and protective shoe covers on his shoes during the time that he toured the control room. Yesterday, radiation levels in the control room reportedly were considerably lowered, and the workers there were able to remove their protective masks.
Dick, we might add here that President Carter is no stranger to a radioactive accident. He supervised the cleanup of a nuclear accident in Canada back in 1949, and he was in a core area where there was very heavy radioactivity for about 90 seconds, and he said in his book, Why Not the Best, that he descended into the reactor and worked frantically for our allotted time in the cleanup attempt. Of course, as you know, he is an engineer, a graduate of the Naval Academy, and he served aboard nuclear submarines and with Admiral Rickover.
Mitch, also, there is some question as to what danger, if any, there really is for someone who is that close to the reactor and, in fact, in the control room. The radiation levels that were monitored in the air above the reactor today were within what is considered the not hazardous range, but within what was considered the safe range. Just before the president was due to arrive in Middletown, there were helicopters in the air monitoring air samples from the reactor. Periodically, gas emissions come from the reactor. Those are said to be intentional at sometimes, unavoidable exploitable at other times. They are a product of the pressure that is built up in parts of the reactor. The gas is emitted so that pressure doesn't continue to build up. But even when that happens, as it did most recently last night, the radiation levels are not raised considerably.
Dick, we might add here that we were told that just a little over an hour ago, the NRC did release another statement, their statement for the day, saying no change in temperature and pressure. The venting of radioactive gas was continuing on a periodic basis, and they were working on the recombiners. But they said, if anything, there was a slight lowering of temperature, but they didn't quantify that, and they promised another briefing. We were told that Dr. Denton would perhaps join in this statement after the president. What do you know about that?
We're told the same, Mitch, that Dr. Denton is to brief reporters here following the president's statement. And you know the stability that was reported this morning. This seems to be the rule now. There are not significant changes, as far as we know, that are going on in the reactor. And it's the problem seems to be trying to find a way to deal with the situation that was created on Wednesday and that was exacerbated on Friday. It seems as if the technical experts are able to maintain the status quo, but of course that can't be maintained forever. What they want to do is try to find some way of controlling or of removing that bubble of hydrogen gas that's sitting atop the reactor core, and also some way of ensuring that cooling water can continue to flow through the reactor to make sure that the uranium core is cooled down. And that's what apparently they're having the problem with.
I understand the president is in the building, in the Borough Hall, upstairs at this point.
They closed the doors. We are sitting in the auditorium. It's the auditorium and basketball court in the Middletown Borough Hall. They closed the doors just after the president left his car, which was on, drove up the main street of the town. He entered the building to the applause of 300 or 400 people lining the street outside. They closed the door so we could not see where he went. We were told that he did go upstairs, presumably to confer with some local officials. The room we're in is, as I say, it looks like a school auditorium almost any place in America. And like many school auditoriums, it doubles as a basketball court. The president will be speaking from a position that's at the top of the key, just a few yards in front of the in front of one of the baskets, and behind him will be an American flag and also a flag of the state of Pennsylvania. And right now we're just waiting for him to come back to the podium and make his statement.
Right. Geographically speaking, this town is very close to the facility, and we have been hearing stories of people fleeing homes and leaving the area. What was your opinion of what was going on in the town? Is it a ghost town, or you said there were several hundred people outside when the president arrived?
People that we've seen seem largely unconcerned, but it depends on what the current feel is, on whether or not someone is saying there is a crisis imminent or whether or not someone is saying that the crisis seems to have passed. There is a curfew that's in effect, a 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. curfew here in Middletown. That's been in effect since Friday. But largely that's because several hundred people have left, and the police want to prevent any burglaries. There were also some reports of some individuals who were going door to door, knocking on doors and urging people to evacuate. When the people left their homes, the homes were burglarized. They were, there has been no evacuation call.
Dick, let me interrupt you here. We're going to be with you shortly when the president does arrive. We thank you for this immediate status report. This has been a CBS News special report on the visit of the president to the Three Mile Island Nuclear Power Plant. I'm Mitchell Krause, CBS News.